Welcome to the Tippy Tappy Sports World Cup 2023 podcast. You're with the brothers, Tims. It's been a while, but welcome, Aaron. What's happening in New York? How are you?
Hello, 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 Damien. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, it's been a while. People have just been waiting by their laptop to get the latest Tippy Tappy Sports.
And rightly so.
It's only been 4 years. I think the last time we did one of these was probably for the last Cricket World Cup. And so much has happened.
So much.
Pandemic. Sports commentary. Cricket commentary is now mostly filmed. Like, they've got cameras in the commentary boxes. I'm like, I don't need to see, you know,
anyone.
Anyone. I don't want to see Adam Collins, you know, sort of grimacing his way through, you know, a fiery spell from Scott Boland.
But this is a thing, though, where the proliferation of cameras has kind of invaded everywhere. I mean, you can't even listen to a podcast without there being some stupid video of like the idiot bogans with the moustaches reading out jokes to each other, laughing uncontrollably at stuff that's not particularly funny.
Always had strong views about those guys, haven't you? Who are they?
I don't know.
Don't actually know the names of any of the people. Don't know who's in the Australian World Cup squad. But it is all filmed, and I think we're taking a stand against that. We're not filming this. You don't need to see us. We probably already know what we look like.
And even if you don't, who cares?
Two listeners of this podcast understand quite well what we look like. But we're not going to do that. We're not going to perform for the camera. Where this is a purely, voice based medium, and we want to uphold the proud traditions of radio, the phonograph, the gramophone, all the great technologies. We continuing in that tradition. Ray Warren voice, or sort of, was that Ray Warren, or is this Eric Arbett's voice within 4 minutes of this podcast starting? But anyway, how are you, Damien?
Look, I'm well. I've certainly recovered since the last World Cup. I know it's been, I know a lot has happened.
That was a
not
tough
only,
one.
Not only has obviously there been a pandemic, but they've gotten rid of the boundary countback rule. I mean, it's only taken them 4 years.
Well, it doesn't seem like England needs it anymore, because there's no question about which team scored more boundaries today. But we can get into that later. I'm not sure what the format of this conversation is, but I imagine you've got quite a tight run sheet kind of planned out. So don't want to sort of get in the way of your professional flow.
No, that's very kind of you. To answer your question, how have I been? Look, so well, I know that I've improved my ability to complete my timesheets on time. That's been a real win. I wouldn't say efficiency in terms of completing work product has improved in the last 4 years, but so what? Who cares?
It's not. You don't subscribe to late stage capitalism's cult of productivity and efficiency.
No, I don't. Why would I? I mean, if you've read any of Mazzucato, you would know.
You're one of the big Mazzucato heads that what's the name of your film?
Whatever it is.
Whatever that it is. One. Johnny and Boyles or whatever it's called.
Let's just call it Abbott Tout.
the Abbott Tout. There are a lot of Mazzucato heads, a lot of sort of degrowth communists lurking in the breakout rooms and so on and so forth.
Yeah, they're all there. They're all there, just degrowthing as we speak.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
But no, look, turning to the cricket, let's let's take this seriously for a moment. I'm not sure how you feel, but there seems to be a lot of sport that's played constantly, so much so that this 2023 50 over World Cup, frankly, has just kind of snuck up on me, and I forgot that it was on. I mean, I knew that it was on this year, but given, you know, how much other crap has been going on, whether it's the Rugby World Cup, the, you know, the National Rugby League, obviously all of the success that Ange Postecoglou has been having with Tottenham midfields, as though this particular World Cup is just a bit of a forgotten child. Yeah, like no one's
just a bit of a nothing burger. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of conversation. Well, I suppose, you know, just in purely cricketing terms, I guess there's just so much short form cricket on now between all the different tournaments, the IPL and all the satellite IPL tournaments, and also just the frequency of the in recent years of the T20 World Cup, which happened, you know, back to back years, right? You know, 2021, then 2022. Means that, well, actually, we don't care about 50 over cricket anymore, and we should abolish it, probably, because what is the point of these? Well, I mean, apart from the World Cup, like, what is the point of like the bilateral one-day tournaments? No one cares. No one gets excited about it the way they used to do for the Benson and Hedges series. You know, we don't, and I think a lot of that is probably due to the fact that we don't have, you know, cigarette sponsors anymore. We need to bring back the SIGs. You got to get the SIGs if you want to revive one-day cricket. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So why are we doing this? Why are we playing this tournament? You know, what does it mean that Australia's won 5 one-day international World Cups and no other country has won more than 2? It used to be like a great distinction. It used to be like, you know, in the early 2000s, people were like, wow, you know, we're the best cricket team in the world, and you know, we've got all these World Cups to prove it, and it used to mean something. Yeah. It used to mean something, you know, like when Bruce Reid was sort of bowling short to whoever it was, and he hit the 6 and 4.
Come on, that was Alan Lamb. That was Alan Lamb. That was the SCG. That was obviously an out of cycle. That's the kind of Benson and Hedges one day international that you were talking about.
Yeah, it was like a meaningful thing. It was like, oh, you know, I can't believe we lost the Benson and Hedges series. You know, when was the last time you heard those words? But you know, this thing of kind of the one day is meaning something in the Australian summer. Obviously, the whole, you know, international cricket calendar is scrambled and degraded and doesn't have these kind of defined periods where, you know, this is Australia's summer bit, and then there's the South African bit, then there's the English bit, then there's the Indian bit. And I mean, you know, I guess that's not such a bad thing, because ultimately everyone just had to work around Australian England's calendars, which is not particularly fair. But now it's just like, you know, like one day, I can't remember a single bilateral one-day tournament that's happened in the last 20 years, like, or probably since Alan Lamb, Bruce Reid, which was like 1990.
No, I actually think that was 1987, but
'87.
Obviously, there's the Michael Bevan,
Bevo's final the West ball Indies, 4, which is like, I guess it was because it was the first of those really exciting tight finishes, but you see that all the time now in T20 cricket, so it's not.
Doesn't have the impact.
I mean, it's a little bit lame. And Michael Bevan himself is obviously such a tragic figure in Australian cricket, asking, you know, can you give me a job? You know, I could be a good batting coach. Like sort of Damien Martin style. But yeah, I just like, you know, what is this? Is this thing going to survive? I mean, your very good friend Mark Nicholas, I saw the other day, who's now the MCC president, apparently. Came out and was like, you know, we think, you know, we, the English, think that, one day cricket should be restricted to World Cups now, and it should only be a World Cup affair. But then it kind of raises the issue of like, well, if you're only playing it at a World Cup, why play it at all? Why don't you just limit it to T20 cricket and Test cricket? But then you know, I'm not like a massive fan of T20 cricket. I know you are. I know you're a big, you know, Chennai Super Kings fan, Kolkata Knight Riders. Yeah, there we go. Because of the Bollywood connection, which I know is very important to you. Owned by Bollywood
royalty. You actually can't be in Bollywood unless you are royalty. But look, it is an interesting. Firstly, how on earth did my so-called friend Mark Nicholas become the president of the MCC? Like that seems ludicrous. That you know, you have a guy who barely played a high level of cricket. I think he played for England A or some crap like that.
Well, he certainly didn't play at all, that's for sure.
Well, we'll come back to my level of cricket.
Your exploits on the Maidans of...
Yeah. I mean, how Mark Nicholas ended up as MCC president seems quite remarkable, given the guy was just a media personality, right? I mean, then not even a good one. Like, what was so good about Mark Nicholas?
Yeah.
He was...
Well, he sort of fits the part, though, doesn't he? He's kind of sort of, you know, plummy and sort of, you know, always seems like he should have a cravat on or something. The hand in the pocket and sort of, you know, just
flouncing
about the sport.
Yeah.
You know, sort of with the sort of fake teeth coming out of his mouth. We should actually get the cameras on this now, because this is good visual comedy. But, I don't know. But, I mean, he's, you know, I can see why he's making that point, because it's sort of, it is, you know, to come back to your point, it's like, well, I guess this thing is happening now and we all need to pay attention to it, but none of us were really
ready,
excited about it. None of us were gassed.
So, this idea that Nicholas said in terms of it being limited to a once every 4 year event is probably even more silly, because there's no reason why people would want to watch it every 4 years if they don't want to watch it as a regular piece of entertainment. And I mean,
right, and it's I guess also like, well, how do you know who's good at it? Because I mean, it does take a particular skill. It is, okay, it's kind of close to T20 cricket, but it is different at the same time. Like, the innings are paced a different way, the field settings work differently, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it is kind of its distinct skill. Like, I mean, you won't necessarily... Yes, there'll be a lot of overlap between the two limited overs national teams for each country, but it won't always be perfect overlap.
No, it won't be. And, I mean, the only good thing about the 50-over format is that, you know, if a team initially doesn't do well, and you know, in their innings, then they do have the ability to come back, and there's still enough scope within the duration of the match for it not to be this kind of lay down misere in that it always is for T20, where if someone comes out and takes sort of four wickets or whatever it is. Within the first,
it's game over.
It's useless. It's done. It's like, you might as well just go home immediately rather than wait the 3 hours or however long it is for the T20 to be completed. So
yeah, you're convincing yourself that there is an important place still for one day cricket in the international cricket calendar, and you're actually probably one of the game's preeminent boosters.
That's right. I'm going to set up a 50-over support group, probably on Facebook, because that's probably the right demographic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For people who are coping with, you know, the fact that overs 26 to 38 usually just get ignored. Like, when was the last time you remember something interesting happening in over 32? It's not, it's all like first 10 overs, last 10 overs. So let's just cut out the middle 30 and get back to T20 cricket.
Yeah, just properly cut to the chase. The other thing about this particular tournament is that, as seems to be the case now with all sort of modern World Cup tournaments, is that it feels like it's going to go on forever. This is like kind of like a, I think it's 60-day lag from the opening game to the final.
Has there been any sort of explanation of why it's taking so long? Because it's not like sort of the Rugby World Cup where they're stepping on each other's heads and they need like a week to recover between each match. Like, they're just pretty thick in it. Like, it's pretty easy. We've all done it. So I don't really understand why it needs this big gap between the group matches. I guess they're all playing each other or whatever, and it's like this very long and convoluted group
stage.
Well,
that's the other thing that's obviously different is the format, in that they've done away with the groups, and just everyone plays everyone.
Yeah, quote unquote group stage is what I meant. I know there aren't groups. I didn't just find that out while you were saying
thank
that. So it's this other format. I mean, when we get to the Super Sixes?
Even back, was that the 99 World Cup? Like the Super Sixes?
I think that was the 99.
I never quite understood what that was intended to do.
Was that like sort of the repertoire or something?
I don't know. It was like the top two in each group and the third best across all of the groups. Yeah. Or whatever.
So like elimination final, then qualifying final for the eliminated team. And then this very circuitous routes to the final. But I mean, what amazing kit.
Absolutely brilliant.
From the 99. Best kit ever? Pakistan 92 probably, right?
Well, everyone had the white stripe. In the 92,
it was good with the coloured stripes on the top.
Yeah, whereas 99 they maintained a degree of some might say autonomy, freedom to be able to sort of create their own strips. The strips these like at least more recently the Australian strips really are quite a neon, disgusting yellow. Like it's quite harsh.
Yeah, well, because Australia had that sort of, like, phase in 2003, 2007. You remember the 2007 kit? It was very dull. It was, like, sort of this dirty sort of yellow. It was kind of, Adam Gilchrist in the... It was kind of like they just needed to wash the clothes. They hadn't, they would gone out and rolled in the dirt, and then they sort of went out and played the cricket matches. So there was that kind of muddled yellow, sort of more of a yolk, more of an ochre-ish yellow. And now they've sort of gone back to kind of neon, which I think is a little bit sort of Australian electro circa 2012, isn't it? It's a little bit sort of Tame Impala, a little bit, a little bit cut copy, a little bit... Miami Horror. It's a little bit Miami Horror, I think.
It's just a bit too high-vis. Tame Impala would probably be offended to be sort of lumped into a category of Australian electro from...
He's more of an artist, isn't he?
Artist. He's an artist.
He's a good... he's a good mate of yours, isn't
he? Yeah, we're mates. Just me, him and Mark Nicholas all hanging out.
Anyway, so the format sucks. One-day cricket is pointless, but here we are, and we're excited about the next 500 days of cricket that we'll be watching. And at the end of it all, sort of India will win, and that won't surprise anyone. But big surprise overnight, the first match, which I would be very keen to get your thoughts.
Yes,
on.
Yes, a replay.
You stayed up, the rematch of the last World
Final
Cup match, of course. You stayed up late into the Sydney night and watched. I
watched the end of the England innings and the start of the Kiwi innings. And, you know, I thought, actually, I thought New Zealand were very good. I mean, I can't remember the name of...
That is reflected in the result.
No, but I mean, you know, like the Kiwi bowlers,
the child,
were good. I mean, the English batsmen, sorry, batters, the English batters did that thing of just throwing their wickets away, which seemed perfectly fine. I mean, it always the score, their total seemed a bit undercooked when they were all out. I mean, interesting that there was probably only there was like a Sheffield Shield kind of style crowd in to watch the game.
At Narendra Modi Stadium.
In Ahmedabad.
It's like what is the capacity? It's like 100,
well, it looks like about 100 million. I mean, the stadium looks it looks even worse when there's no one in it.
Yeah,
You know, it brought back shades of watching sport during the COVID period. It was quite triggering.
Yeah. Did you immediately left the house to go to a park and drink a bottle of wine? Sort of 4 a.m.
That's right. Just got to get out.
And then sort of had a mask on. I guess stay, you know, 2 meters away or whatever. But it's disappointing that the crowd wasn't better. But what you did have, of course, was, I think, probably the fruits of, I would suggest, the most successful child naming strategy in history. This kid, this 22, 23-year-old Kiwi kid. His first name, of course, is an amalgam of Rahul and Sachin, and he batted accordingly. Yeah. You know, fastest century for a New Zealander in World Cup history, right? Youngest century maker in New Zealand World Cup history, or whatever the statistic should be. So that's great. What do you think you'll call your child to help them to cricketing
greatness?
Probably
a combination of maybe like Deepak Patel. And maybe Imran Khan.
D-Run. I was thinking of going for sort of Wazim and Shane. Washane.
Washane. I'm sure there's someone out at, you know, Greenacre or Auburn or whatever called Washane.
Someone out bloody west part of the city I don't ever go to.
There's probably a Washane.
That does actually sound kind of. I know we have a very diverse audience, so no cultural insensitivities intended by what I'm about to say, but it does sound quite African American, doesn't it? Washane. You know, like sort of in the Debrickashaw Ferguson mould. Really, really cool that he sort of... I mean, can you imagine if he'd been given that name and then he didn't become like a good international cricketer? Would have been... I mean, that was kind of like a 22-year bet that his parents took, and it finally kind of paid off last night. They must be very relieved. Relief throughout the Ravindra...
Household.
The Ravindra household.
Where do they live? In Nelson?
Wellington,
Wellington.
Wellington, yeah. Probably, you know, just north of Whangarei. I mean, kind of like everyone in New Zealand, you just orient yourself around Whangarei. Whangarei and Waikanae. But, so that was good. So it's good to see England get tonked. It's a shame it didn't happen in like a sort of knockout game or whatever.
Yeah. But, well, that's the thing.
They don't seem very good, though, do they? Like,
no.
Kind of undercooked. Like, before the last World Cup, everyone was like, yeah, this is England's moment. And they were very, very good. Scored very quickly. But I think the sort of... It seems like they've gone... You know, they've got this baz-ball thing happening in Test cricket, but then in one-day cricket, maybe because it does fall into this, like, what is one-day cricket? Are we just slogging at T20 style? Are we... sort of pacing an innings? Are we going for a sort of Michael Bevan style, find the gaps,
just graft,
you know, and get, you know, yeah, just sort of 78 off 80? Is that sort of the canonical one-day score? Is it, you know, 140 off 90?
Yeah.
sort of more of a T20 style score. So I think they're like a little bit trapped, a victim, if you like, of this cultural indecision that has taken over the sport. Because last time it felt like they just were much more focused. They scored like in a million miles an hour, and now it's like, you know, everyone's playing T20 cricket, and like they're all playing together, and the bonds of solidarity have extended beyond the national borders, and there's the cosmopolitan turn that we have to contend with, and I think that's been bad for national rivalries. You know, we don't want Mitchell Santner being friends with Heinrich Klassen.
Who wants to see that?
They should be at each other's throats, you know.
They should be ignoring overtures to have beers in the dressing room afterwards. Like, that's not...
Yeah, exactly. That's the spirit. Ashes 2023. But it's good that England lost. Obviously, you're very happy about that.
I'm always happy when England lose. In the way that, I'm always generally happy when a Queensland team loses at anything.
There we go. You would have been a very happy man over the weekend then. Ivan Cleary. You know, with the heck? I mean, everyone has that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like I was watching sort of the... I watched the first match at the Rugby World Cup. Who do we play? Georgia or whatever. We just beat Georgia. And people are like, oh, we're still in with the Jets. I'm like, pretty obvious that we're not going to do very well at this tournament. But everyone had the Ivan Cleary haircut. I was like, is that... Are they contractually obliged to do that?
I don't know. It's this sort of strange middle-aged fade. It looks ridiculous. Yeah.
You've given it a go?
I haven't taken a photo of Ivan to the barber and said make me look like this, I just don't think it's something that would probably suit me. But
could be quite attractive.
Matt, put it this way: there might come a time when I might want to give it a go. I don't know,
That's good. That only took 29 minutes to get into WOG voice.
Well, you know, so much has happened on the WOG side of things. But we'll save that for another occasion. The coming back to the cricket for a second, it would be remiss of us, not to mention the notable absence of the West Indies from this tournament. And obviously, much has been said about the demise of cricket generally in the West Indies, it's even more ridiculous that they failed to qualify for this particular World Cup. And coming back to our initial point, part of me thinks that the reason why people want to Mark Nicholas is talking about hanging on to the 50-over format is probably just a degree of nostalgia. In that it is, obviously, it's the original short form format, and it's one that the West Indies originally dominated. When they dominated cricket more generally.
So you think people like, have the World Cup, but actually in the back of their minds, they're still looking at, I don't know, Joel Garner or whatever at the 1975 something. When did the World Cup, 1975 World Cup? I mean, how long has the World Cup been going?
Since 1975.
No, 83. Since 1975. Yeah, there we go. That could be a good point. So nostalgia value. Yeah, well, I mean, that's probably right, I think, people just, because it does have its own history that is important to people who were alive when one day cricket actually meant something, or it felt like the stakes were real, and that this was deciding which country was good and which country wasn't, kind of thing. Those performances from the 90s, Imran Khan, Srinath Jayasuriya, etc., etc. Aravinda De Silva, century 1996 final. You know, I mean, they're like sort of important markers, especially I think for the progress of the game in subcontinent. You know, South Asia, subcontinent. How many syllables do you think you could take it down to and it still make it make sense? Subcon. Yeah. So yeah, I think nostalgia does play a part. But
yeah,
what about Australia?
Australia's chances.
Yeah.
It seems to be. It's almost as if Australia's always is always going to be there or thereabouts, as they like to say. But the form just seems to fluctuate. I mean, I know they beat Pakistan in a couple of games, as far as the lead up went. But I mean, the other funny. I mean, it's like, I guess it's not that funny, but the other remarkable thing is that Mitch Marsh sort of seems to have come good again.
Yeah.
So
after the Ashes, he's sort of taken some of that form, which was, I guess, was really only the century that he scored, right?
Yeah.
But he's come good, and you know, he seems like quite a likable character, isn't he? He's quite a funny old bloke, isn't
he? He's affable.
Yeah, he's quite affable. He's certainly more affable than his brother. His brother seems kind of like the prototypical stinky Anglo.
Oh,
and Mitch Marsh doesn't quite. So yeah, well, because you've spent time smelling him.
Oh, I mean, all that time I spent talking to both of the Marsh brothers. It was talking to his brother, honestly, was like, it's like getting stuck at the party with the guy who's the charisma black hole where,
yeah,
you know, time really does stand still.
Yeah, he's like, I'm working in compliance.
Yeah, yeah.
Pause. It's like, you know, what's the follow-up question? You know?
Yeah, it's like, and how's that going?
Good. Yeah, yeah, you live around here? yeah, okay, so because you interviewed him for those things, you know, in 2017 or 2018 or whatever it was, right?
Yeah, for Optus Sport for that Ashes tour. No, and Mitchell Marsh was a much more entertaining and much more engaging character than his brother. I don't know. I'm not actually sure what Sean is doing right now, but he's obviously not with the squad, so he's probably just at home sitting on the couch, thinking about.
He's probably thinking about his average in Test cricket.
Yeah,
thinking about all the opportunities he was given.
He squandered
himself at Test level. So is he going to be a good captain? Is he going to be as good as Aaron
Finchy?
Finchy. I saw Finchy at you know, Major League Cricket. Well, you saw that photo I took of him, like when he was walking around the Rossboro Memorial Hall or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Where they had the launch event, and he was kind of just walking around with his backpack on, just sort of like, you know, looking at the, because they had all these exhibits about sort of old racist guys who died in Vietnam or whatever.
Yeah.
He's kind of just walking around reading every plaque very, very carefully. And I was like, I just thought I was going to go over and talk to him. I'm not going to announce that I'm a member of the media, because this could be a moment to really establish a rapport human to human with an international cricketer. And so I was like, this is a really good one, isn't it? Like, you know, just some random thing about some guy who fought in Vietnam and hated black people or whatever, and he's like, yeah, it's pretty good. He's just sort of moved on. Didn't want to talk to me. Brushed by Finch. Brushed by my namesake. I was like, come on, we share a name. We pronounce it differently, but that doesn't matter.
just for all two of our listeners, just explain exactly where you were and why you were talking to Finchy.
Thank you. Thank you for the question, Damien. I was I was in Dallas, Texas, to write a piece about the big launch of T20 cricket in America, Major League Cricket. So the first tournament was held in July, with teams, like I'd say sort of four of the six teams were backed by IPL franchises. So the Knight Riders, the Super Kings, Mumbai Indians, and well, one that I can't remember.
Yep.
And then the others were sort of, actually the others were sort of, had these partnerships with Cricket New South Wales and Cricket Victoria. So, you know, and they got a bunch of really, they got really good players to go. Obviously, the domestic US players are not people I'd ever heard of before.
Sure.
And a lot of them were kind of sort of Indian players who didn't quite make it in India. So they'd sort of renounced whatever, you know, because India's weird and doesn't allow its T20 players to play outside India.
Yeah.
And there are all those things about sort of no dual citizenship and so on and so forth. So they kind of renounced their Indian citizenship, came and got US citizenship, or just came here for other reasons and have ended up playing in Major League Cricket. But they had, yeah, so they had all these you know, international superstars, you know, Amit Nourkia and, you know, Finchy and, you know, Stoinis and Zampa and, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that was the launch event. And Finch was, like, one of the sort of, you know, another charisma black hole was one of the sort of people they put up for the launch event, and he managed to get everyone there completely unexcited about the tournament that was about to start. So mission accomplished, Aaron.
And how did that tournament go? I mean, because I know there was a bit of coverage, and then obviously nothing.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, the tournament itself was good. Like, the standard was basically the same as every other T20 tournament, or every sort of, like, decent T20 tournament with international players. Yeah. So it didn't, I mean, I don't watch, like, a ton of T20 cricket, but it looked the same as the other T20 matches that I've seen. So it was good, and, you know, it was this weird sort of stadium that they built kind of on the floodplain, because, you know, it's like Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, as they call it, is, you know, 7-8 million people, but it's very, very spread out, and,
right,
you know, between Dallas and Fort Worth, which are essentially sort of two cities, it's just this big floodplain that has nothing on it, and so they just put a stadium in the middle of nowhere, and you can't get a... I remember, like, just talking to the mayor of the town, which is sort of called Grand Prairie. He was like, yeah, we got our own taxi service. It's like they sort of funded this taxi service just for this little suburb, essentially. Right. And so, but it doesn't go beyond the city limits, and there's no public transport to the stadium or in this town at all. So it was all very, very odd. And they basically refitted, they converted a sort of off-brand kind of minor league baseball stadium into a cricket stadium for this tournament. So it is a purpose-built or purpose-reconfigured cricket stadium, with, like, you know, and the pitch all worked properly, and the outfield was good and all that kind of stuff, and they had the proper orientation for the pitch, and they had, like, a grandstand. The food was really good, most importantly, because it was like they had this caterer called Foodistan that had, so the Indian food was very, very good, and most of the people who were there, because Irving, Texas, which is nearby, has a very big South Asian population. Most of the people there were, you know, either South Asian migrants or the children of the migrants. That was actually the thing that surprised me the most, was that the kids were into it. Even though they'd been born in the US and obviously surrounded by US sport. I mean, Dallas Cowboys have their stadium sort of a 5-minute drive away from where this cricket tournament was happening.
Right.
The kids were, like, really, really into cricket. And so it was, like, all these American kids walking around kind of talking about, you know, like, strike rates and googlies and
cover drives,
power plays and stuff and cover drives. And so that was kind of interesting to see. But, you know, it's good to, like, be up close when they're hitting a lot of sixes.
Yeah.
Like, when you see the six just sort of sail over your head, it's quite a magical feeling. So good food, you know.
Reasonably priced. Certainly no Hems-style catering at the SCG or anything like that.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, obviously, as an august member of the media, it was all free for me. Because I was sort of up in the executive suites, which is where the press box was. But the press box was crap. And so outside all the executive suites, which you could just like walk into. So I was like walking into the executive suite for the Los Angeles Knight Riders. And they had the CEO of India Wins, or no, that's Mumbai Indians. But whatever, the CEO of the Knight Riders company had flown out from India for it. And so I just like walked into the box and I was like, oh, you know, can I talk to you? And he's like, yeah, of course. So there was it was kind of interesting from that perspective, because there wasn't actually very much media management that went on. In fact, the media people for the league were totally useless. Like, I'd say, oh, I was wondering if I could, you know, talk to some of the CEOs of the clubs or whatever. And it was like this little English guy who was very sunburnt. Kind of like very sunburnt and kind of, you know, just sitting in the corner with a cap on. And he's like, I mean, it was also like 40 degrees every day. So terrible conditions for playing cricket. But like sitting in the press box where the air conditioning didn't work, with a cap on and like a long sleeve shirt on, buttoned up to the cuff. Sort of, I'd be like, oh, can I talk to some of the CEOs? And he's like, yeah, no, I'll look into it. And then he just sort of silently went back to staring at his computer screen or whatever. So, so he was totally useless. But, you know, you could just walk in and talk to whoever at any point you wanted. And outside to get to the real point here about the food, outside the executive suites, they had the sort of hotel style buffet with the hotel pans with the curries and the papadums and the
sitting, you know, in the bain-marie,
the pickles, sitting in the bain-marie, sitting in the pickles and the achar and the, you know, all the and it was really good. Like the rice was very good. I was very impressed with the rice, because I'm not a huge fan of basmati rice.
It was more of a palaf though, wasn't it?
It had pulao elements, yes, I would say, but you know the way basmati rice often just is very dry.
Yeah.
This had some glisten. Yeah. It had some moisture.
Yeah.
And it had like the little sort of fennel seeds, the rice, the pickles. Yeah. That's what cricket should be about, you know. It's not about what happens on the field. Who cares? Hit some sixes, take some wickets, whatever. As long as you get the curries at the end,
that's what
matters most.
It's the catering.
Yeah.
It's the catering, stupid.
Yeah, exactly. And so after you know, eating sort of an Indian meal and watching sort of 10 overs of cricket or whatever, you get back in the Uber and you go back to downtown Dallas where there's nothing and there's like one Irish bar. You sort of sit there and... you know, just look at your phone and then go back to the crappy life. Great city, though. Great city.
That's right. Just sort of, what was the Irish bars? Like McGettigan's or Flanagan's or some kind of crap like that.
I found one place that was sort of kind of a good dive bar and had sort of live music. But it was in the area that's supposed to be the fun hipster area of Dallas, which is called Deep Ellum.
Yeah.
And it's more like big, it's kind of like the meatpacking district, but in Dallas. And so it's like kind of clubs and the queues and people sort of having fights on the street and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so it's pretty good. What else happened? I mean, there was I was walking past the hotel when I was on my way to Dealey Plaza, which was my first port of call, of course, once I got to Dallas, go and pay my tribute to Lee Harvey Oswald and, you know, the grassy knoll. And and on the walk over, there was a fire in the hotel where most of the teams were staying. So all of the players, the whole building was evacuated.
Right.
And so basically all of the players, the cream of international T20 talent was just out on the street in the CBD of Dallas. Shane Watson was there. He looked at me. I think he knows. He knows that I wrote that thing about him 8 years ago.
He was looking for a review.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Timsy! He was asking for the review still from the 2015 Ashes.
That's right.
So that was good just to kind of see them all sort of milling about, kind of like in shorts and thongs, and who was talking to whom, you know?
Yeah.
Who was? No one was talking to Watto. No one was interested in talking to Watto.
No, he's got nothing to say for himself anyway.
Yeah, he's an interesting character though. I kind of like him more now than I. He's grown on me. Didn't he have a bat company or something that went bust?
Oh, I don't know.
He tried to come up with a new bat, and turns out that people just want whatever bats already exist. But
yeah, the Kaboom.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that was Finchie at Major League Cricket, and
That was that.
But how is Australia going to do in the World Cup, Damien?
Well, I think on that basis, we don't know.
Should win. there or thereabouts. The Damien Timms's official prediction: there or thereabouts.
Put it this way: they'll do better than the Wallabies.
Hey,
there we go.
I mean, it does. It does. I think they're going to win. Actually, I think they've got proven firepower. No Tim David, though. I interviewed Tim David when he was, before the tournament, when he was sort of staying overnight in Manhattan because he was playing for Mumbai Indians, who have the New York franchise.
Right.
So he was staying downtown, and I went and interviewed him. I didn't do anything with the interview, but it was kind of offered to me, and I was like, yeah, I'll go and talk to this guy. Why not?
Sure.
And then he and the media manager asked for a restaurant recommendation, and he'd mentioned, he was like, Tim David was like, yeah, I get up in the morning, I live on Cottesloe Beach, I get up in the morning, and I go for a swim, and then I go to the butcher. Like, that's how he described his daily routine. He goes for the swim, and then goes straight to get some meat, some fresh meat from the butcher. So I was like, oh, well, you should go to Keane's and have the mutton chop. And they did, and they loved it.
No, that's good. That's great. I mean, it's a bit hard to go to Keane's and not enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're a big Keane's head, aren't you?
Yeah, K-head.
Yep. So you know, they've got the firepower. They've got, you know, Stark, who is, you know, still one of the greatest limited overs bowlers in the world.
Yeah. He's 33. Is he 33 now?
Yeah, he's pretty old, right? Like, I mean, usually, I think, like, in the past, by this point, like, express pace bowlers would be all packed up and done, right?
Yeah, but he's still...
And he's not as fast as he used to be, obviously, but, I mean, he still hits, like, 140, 145 occasionally.
Yeah, so it's still fast. And he still, I mean, you know, gets the ball to swing occasionally. So, yeah. You know, I mean, he'll be good for a couple of spells, but he's the most successful fast bowler in World Cup history, I think, in terms of, like,
yeah,
wickets taken, and his average is still incredibly low, I think, for at the World Cup level.
You'd say he's underappreciated as an elite limited overs bowler, or even possibly as a bowler generally. I do think he's become better as a test bowler, hasn't he?
I think so, yeah. But just more consistent.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, also as his pace has dropped off, he's been maybe a bit less wayward or whatever, because, you know, he's not spraying the ball at sort of 150 Ks on a regular basis. But, he's such a good limited overs bowler. You know, he was the driving force of the 2015 World Cup.
Success, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, him and then the others, they're pretty good. there is kind of like this sort of, you know, Maxwell, Stoinis kind of universe of quote-unquote all-rounders who aren't really all-rounders, they're just sort of batsmen who bowl a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're not like, that's kind of the, I would say that's sort of our weakness, isn't it?
yeah, like not they're not elite at any one particular discipline.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean Maxwell will fire for like in a game, either a game that doesn't count or maybe there will be a game when it does count. And Stoinis is kind of the same. Obviously when he's not being papped on the streets of New York.
Yes. papped with his influencer girlfriend.
Yeah.
The influencer Pilates girlfriend, sort of with the crap sort of shine clothes on or whatever. Well, you quite like her actually, don't you? She's a regular fixture of your searched bar on Instagram. well, actually, yeah. Maybe follow her. Let's have a look.
No, I don't. I don't actually know who she is.
You don't follow. You don't follow any of the wags.
No.
Sort of Bill Lloyd style. You don't sort of just. Have the sort of the pervy follow of the wags.
The one, I mean, you'd want to follow Ricky Ponting's wife.
Ricky Ponting.
Kylie Clark, now that she's no longer with Michael Clark. Kylie Clark.
What about Tim Payne? Tim Payne sort of tried to make himself a character in the lead up to the World Cup by persistently talking about this thing of Ben Stokes coming back into the team and taking the place off Harry Brook. Which you saw this, right? Like he kept being quoted. He like found a way to get himself quoted on this issue that, like, who cares ultimately? And why is Tim Payne like the conscience? He's sort of the moral compass of cricket or something. It's like, mate, you know, we all know what you said. Are you still seriously hard?
Yeah, I mean, these are the... Yeah, look, and knowing him, he probably is.
Yeah, yep. That photo of him sort of in the for the Barbie sort of dress-up thing party that they had was good.
Yeah.
Dressed as Ken, you know.
Ridiculous.
I mean, what else are you supposed to do? Like, he still plays for Tasmania, doesn't he?
I think he just got dropped or just got...
He's just back to working at Kingsgrove Sports Centre or whatever. But that was a bit weird. But I think we could do pretty well, but who knows?
Who does know? I guess we'll see how these things go, and maybe we can reconvene, because when's Australia's first game is Sunday night? Is it Sunday night or Monday night against India?
When is it? Let's take a look. Oh, on Google, Sunday at 4:30 a.m. So that'll be Sunday night Australia time.
Sunday night Australian time. Okay.
Yeah, 6:30 p.m. Or 7:30 p.m. According to Google, win probability 60% India, 40% Australia.
Oh, well, I mean, who's responsible for calculating those percentages?
Gaming that algo.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Algorithmic capitalism at work.
Oh, what would the Mazzucato head say?
Yeah, Mazzucato.
Yes. Well, on that note, let's...
Is that your child in the background?
let's see what happens on Sunday, and we will.
Let's take it from there. Next steps. Let's have next steps from there.
Action items. Well.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And yeah. Thanks, mate. And see you soon.
See you soon. Yes. Thank you. Okay.
Yep. Thank you.